Trish and Rob McGregor welcome you to a place where all kinds of phenomena flourish. Here we meet authors, researchers, and investigators of the mysterious, the strange, and of the inexplicable anomalies that surround us. Step out of the everyday world and take a journey into the mystical underground.
And if you guys are ready, we'll start in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Mystical Underground. Thank you for joining us. This is Trish McGregor and
Rob McGregor.
And our producer and tech magician, the disembodied voice, John Posey. You can go to themysticalunderground.com, where we make regular blog posts, and we can find out about our books. Among them are Phenomena, Harnessing Your Psychic Abilities, The Secret of Spirit Communication, Sensing the Future, and Aliens in the Backyard. Our newest book is called Mind-Blowing Synchronicities, The Latest Science Stories and Research. Trisha's newest novel is Silent Thunder, which will come out in January of 2026. And Rob's most recent novel is called Tulpas, a story of mysterious beings created through deep meditation. If you're watching us on YouTube, we would appreciate it if you would take a second to click the like, subscribe, and notification buttons so you never miss an episode. If you prefer to listen to the show, it's available wherever you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe there.
Okay, our guest today is Steve Rother. Steve is a pioneering spiritual teacher and channel for non-physical beings known as the Group. He has taught at the UN and has guided seekers worldwide towards empowerment, purpose, and spiritual remembrance through his books, broadcasts, and workshops. And he also works with people and his clients individually. His latest book is called Spiritual Psychology, The 12 Primary Life Lessons. Steve says his book is a way to understand life from a spirit's perspective. Welcome, Steve.
Nice to have you. I'm glad you got that link.
Yeah, no, I actually had the link. I had everything there. I just had to scroll down a little bit.
Okay, I thought I was losing my mind. I thought, I know I sent it to him.
No, you did.
So, Steve, tell us about the group. Who or what is the group, and how did you get involved with the group?
Boy, I went kicking and screaming. First of all, I call myself a drag-along. I did not intend this. My wife was very much into metaphysics. She was a part of a metaphysical church, Church of Religious Science in San Diego, and she was very active in it. I was in construction. I didn't speak that language. Every other word started with F. I mean, it was, you know, I lived in a different world entirely. One New Year's Eve, my wife decided, you know, hey, my church is doing something. Well, I don't drink, so we were always looking for something different to do on New Year's Eve. So I said, okay, I'll go with you. Normally, I just stay home and watch the kids, but I'll go with you just so everybody knows you really do have a husband. I don't show up. So I went. We had a nice gathering, about 35 people or so. We all went through the year deciding what we were finished with and what we wanted to work on in the new year. So we ended up with kind of a Ben Franklin list on both sides, you know, one thing to get rid of and one thing to bring in. We all hugged and kissed, said goodnight at midnight, went home for a couple of hours and came back on the beach in San Diego, down all the way down by Coronado Island. And we built a big bonfire, and those that wanted to continue, they were supposed to basically, each one, take your turn. You would tear up the thing in half. Those things that you were ready to release, you'd throw in the fire. Everybody would go ho, which I thought was kind of cool. And then you'd read the things that you wanted to bring into the rising sun. Well, all night long, I was just trying to get through. I didn't know what Reiki was. I didn't know what a lot of things they were talking. I kept using the word energy, and I didn't know any of that. So I felt really out of place. But now, here I am. I'm a general contractor, so I've got lots of wood. I built a monster fire before everybody got there, and I felt very much a part of it. But I was hiding in the smoke. And I figured I'd watch everybody else do it first, you know, and then I'll get up and do it. The leader gets up there. He holds a stick up to the rising sun. He says, I'm being told Steve needs to go first.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, exactly. I gave a real good glance to my wife at that point. I'll tell you. I said, all right, you know, I can do this. No problem. I just throw this thing in, ripped it up, threw it in, everyone, oh, great. And I held this up. I just had three lines. I only had three lines. I couldn't read them. I just couldn't see. They were blurred. They were focused. I became aware that I was frozen in time.
Huh.
I was aware of everybody, but it's like I couldn't move. And the tears, oh my God, the tears. I became aware right away that my shirt was getting wet from the tears.
Wow.
Because it was early in the morning, you know, New Year's Eve, New Year's morning. So that's when the group came in.
Huh.
My life changed from that moment forward. My wife, too. We went through, that was 30 years ago. It'll be 30 years in December. Yeah. I'll be celebrating 30 years with it.
Did they start speaking? The group?
30 years ago, I started channeling. I started in the beginning in just a chat room. We used to have chat rooms back in those days, not social media. So I started just channeling in a chat room. It grew and it grew and it grew. And finally, I published a book, and it was picked up in a foreign language, and then it was picked up in 18 other languages. So,
wow.
Yeah, we had, today I had, I think I only ended up with 8 books out of the whole 30 years. I'm not a good writer. That's the reality.
18 languages, though. That's great.
Well, it was wonderful. And it really gave us a wonderful opportunity. My wife and I traveled this globe for 15 years. Every month, we were, the first 2 weeks of the month, we were in a different country.
Huh.
And then we'd come home for the last 2 weeks. And we did that for 15 years, except for December. We always took all of December off. But that was amazing. Unbelievable. Channeled 5 times at the United Nations on 2 different continents.
Jeez.
Doors just completely opened very magically. You talk about synchronicity. The group calls those cosmic winks. Yeah. That's exactly how they describe that.
What did you channel at the UN? I'm kind of curious. I mean,
I channeled 5 different times. We channeled 3 times in Vienna at the it's a whole city around the United Nations called the VIC, the International Community. And then twice at the headquarters in New York. Each time was something different. I remember that we were having a problem with Kosovo when this first came up in Vienna, because the delegate from Kosovo was sitting in the audience. And I remember he was asking specific questions about things and so forth about it. So it was really fascinating. I find myself in this situation where this contractor, I really thought I knew what I was going to be when I grew up. I really did. And here my whole life changed.
So how quickly was that transformation? I mean, did you remain a contractor for a number of years, or how did that go? No.
I would have loved to have done that. I really enjoyed contracting because I was able to really build and do some unusual things. When you're a contractor, you bid jobs. So I would bid jobs. We had a small construction company. I hired most of it out. We had 7 guys that worked for us, so it was really small. And we focused mostly on banks and other stores, large stores, things of that nature. So I had a lot of work, and all of a sudden I wasn't getting any jobs. And I'd lower my price, and I'd bid again, and I'd make exceptions, and I'd do this, and I still wouldn't get the jobs. It became obvious the group wanted me to close this and really do what I was supposed to do.
Mm.
It happened magically. I will say that I was never without. My wife was working at the time, so she was able to bring a little money in. And in the meantime, when I started writing these books, they took off. And I was able to support myself fairly soon with doing private sessions, seminars, and so forth. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what would a private session consist of, Steve?
So private sessions I actually do out of channel. And I say that because they're always with me. They're never not here. But I don't actually go into a formal channel when I do that. The group says, you know, ask them about their mother, you know, and then all of a sudden the tears start. So I know I'm on the right track, you know what I mean? So they guide it. But basically, these are life overviews. They want you to know why you went through some certain things that were in your life,
uh-huh.
and what you gained from it, and where you can head in the future. Yeah.
Huh. So, go ahead, Rob. Sorry.
Yeah. Steve, you write that we are spiritual beings attempting to cope with being human rather than humans looking for a spiritual experience.
That's different.
So what brings us here? Why do spirits want to test the waters of physicality?
Well, the way I can describe that is by explaining a little bit of what we call home. It can be called heaven. You can call it where we go when we die. Whatever words you want to put on, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're home, we're all together. We're part of each other. We intricately know everything about every other being. It's almost like we're, you know, it's like this finger knows what this finger is doing. Mm-hmm. So we're part of the same hand, and we really exercise that. But in that situation, we can't grow. We have no polarity. We have no contrast.
Mm.
So we excuse ourselves. We step out of that reality, and we incarnate in a physical body long enough to turn around and see spirit. And that's kind of the idea. That's the evolution of God, if you will, in my book.
Mm. Interesting.
The reason we're here.
Well, we must all be learning a lot since we live in a world of great contrast now.
Don't you hate that? Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
there's a lot to that I think we're going to see. I actually have some very good, I'm very positive about this. And I wasn't pregnant. I stopped watching news. I said, that's it. I'm not going to follow anymore. It's just too draining. And the reality is I'm very positive because I believe in humans. We can be fooled, we can be tricked, we can have technology used on us, and eventually we're going to wake up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's I think what's coming.
That's a good attitude.
Yeah.
But how do we attain mastery over duality, this division that the us versus them that seems to be part of the everyday life?
It is. Yeah, that's a part that I'm wrestling with myself even, because I'm very involved here. I live in the United States. I have a girlfriend who lives in Belgium, who's actually afraid to come over to the United States. So I know things are, they're really, really challenging in some ways. How do we do it? One step at a time. We don't try to move into the fifth dimension. We try to anchor a fifth dimensional reaction. We try to remember home. We try to remember that we're all connected. What if we knew everything about every other person, what this person was thinking, what this person was feeling, what this person had to go through when they were a teenager? What if we had access to all of that? Mm-hmm. That's where we're heading in the fifth dimension. But we have to take it slow, and we have to move as a collective as well, and not only individually, but as a collective. They think that's happening. It really is.
That'd be tough.
Your show wouldn't have existed 30 years ago. So this is
That's true.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, 30 years ago, hardly anybody knew what synchronicity was, unless they were within Jung's circle, you know.
Yeah.
I remember we'd go to the dog park. I'd say, hey, do you know what synchronicity is? What? it was like total befuddlement. Yeah. That's not the case.
Fascinating stuff. Yeah. Absolutely fascinating. And the fascinating part for me is I thought this was very unique, wonderful. I'll be a channel the rest of my life. I'll be a spiritual teacher, whatever you guys want me to do. And they said, no, we want you to teach people how to channel. Everybody should be able to channel. And that's what we do. We've been teaching a lot of people how to.
Do you basically have workshops?
Yeah, we do it. We do it all the time. I believe we all channel. We call it different things.
Mm-hmm.
The artist gets an inspiration over here. They call it something. The musician gets something else. So we bring it down. We ground it in different ways. A lot of people would like to speak in language like I do.
Mm.
I'm a channeler who channels with words, but there's many other ways of doing it. So what we teach people, first of all, is number one, how do you normally channel? How is your natural way? Trish, I can tell you right now from what the group's showing me, you have your degree in kitchen table counseling many times over. You have helped me. Am I right?
That's pretty true.
Okay. So when you actually just get something and you know something, that's a channel.
Mm-hmm.
There's people that will They'll be clairvoyant. They'll end up seeing something or be triggered by a sight, clairaudient, clairsentient, where you just feel things. But I'm claircognizant. Mm. All of a sudden, I know something. And it's the hardest to trust. But that's the basis of what we teach in channeling itself. And like I said, I've been very fortunate to do it all over the world.
So what about
doing one in Russia this next month?
Oh, wow.
I'll be in Vegas, but they'll be in Russia. Nice.
That's interesting. Yeah. Do they speak English?
No, I have to have a simultaneous translator.
Huh. Wow. That is interesting.
Yeah. So what about your upbringing, your parents? Were they spiritual beings, persons, people at all? Religious?
My parents were religious. They were not super religious. Mm-hmm. The best thing I could tell about both of my parents is they were very empowering people, and they were very inclusive. We lived in St. Louis, Missouri, which is right in the middle of the Midwest, very, very, almost a backward state. I can say that. Mm-hmm. I'm from there. and my father actually marched with Martin Luther King when he was having trouble down there in Southern Alabama.
Wow.
So I came from a very inclusive family. Uh-huh. That just believed a whole lot of things, but we were raised in a Methodist religion, a Christian religion. So.
What'd your dad say about King?
He, I'll never forget it. I was actually watching the television. We're watching a TV one night. The news comes on. It shows the police beating the black people on the Pettus Bridge, Edmund Pettus Bridge. Right. And it was the first time that they actually pushed them all back and beat up everybody and everything else. He saw that on television. He went in the other room. He called his brother. He called his best friend. They couldn't keep quiet. They booked a flight. And they went down, and they were down there a week later for the next.
Interesting. Yeah.
So he just couldn't take it.
Yeah.
Kind of like what I feel like right now.
Yeah, right. I mean, when you see ICE agents going and...
Right. The reason I asked you about your background like that, your parents, is that psychologists say that we are who we are through either nature or our genes or nurture or upbringing. But you, in your book, say there's another factor that plays an important role about who we are. Talk about that.
I think we're spirits. We're spirits pretending to be human. Okay. So when we're being raised and we're being taught how to be human. We're taught how to eat, how to walk, how to do all the different aspects of it. And we're taught out of protection to be careful of this, be careful of that. And we lose a lot of our magic. We basically lose a lot of who we really are. And then we grow up, sometimes in our 30s, sometimes in our 40s, sometimes in our 70s. We start waking up and looking for our spirit again. And we go, wait. There's more than just this. I know there's more than me. And we start expanding and really connecting with the spirit in many different ways. So that's kind of an overview, very simplification of it.
What I find sometimes is when I write fiction, I'm actually tuning in on a future event. That happened with Hurricane Katrina in 2005. I just finished a book called Category 5. It wasn't said... Wasn't set Louisiana, but you know, it blew me away because then Katrina happened. All of a sudden, I was on all these radio shows. I thought, wait a minute, I'm not an expert. I got lucky with this, you know.
No, you listened to your channel.
Yeah, I did.
You trusted it.
That's
you
true.
Trusted it. That's the hard part. Mm-hmm. That's the hard part. We all get it. We all get it. But to ground it, to trust it, to actually go on it in the station and say, "This is what I said." That's awesome.
A lot of people laugh at me.
Me too.
John?
Yeah, can I ask a question real quick?
Sure.
Kind of to go back around to Steve's dad, seeing what happened in South Alabama back in the 60s. So did we make any progress between then and now? Or, you know, was there anything that was better at some point, or it never got better, or have we just wrapped back around? That's, I guess,
I do believe it's a pendulum and it swings back and forth. But when it swings really far to one side and it swings the other way, it kind of jumps. And that's kind of what the group describes as the pendulum advancement. So sometimes we have to swing pretty far in the opposite direction to really take a look and see what we're doing, to see who we are, to get a perception of what's going on and so forth. And I think we're going through a lot of that right now. Another way that the group has also described what's taking place right now is that the feminine is rising. We saw it back in the 60s. Yeah, well, we saw it in the 60s. We saw it at different levels where it's boom, boom, boom. And then we saw a really big one called the Me Too movement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a reaction to the Me Too movement.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. Feminine's rising. The masculine saying, no, you don't. We're going to control everything.
Yeah, it's that pendulum.
Yeah.
So if we are all spirits, then why are some people that are here not believing in anything, that there's nothing beyond physical life? I mean, you'd think that there'd be a nugget of something.
We're on the planet of free choice. So we have absolute choice on what we believe.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge about what we believe is we create it. And if you're a religious person and you're expecting to be met at the gate with St. Peter, when you die, St. Peter's going to be sitting there waiting for you, checking your name off the list. If you are fearful when you pass, you create a ripple that you have to deal with when you come back in. So we deal a lot with people who are crossing over to cross over comfortably. We actually believe that hospice workers, people of that nature, are some of the greatest healers we have.
Mm-hmm.
They can help us advance in a lot of ways. So, I don't know if I answered the question or
No, you shed light on it.
I think you refer to yourself as a healing facilitator. Can you tell us about your work with clients in that realm? And are you healing them? Or are they healing themselves? Or how does that work?
According to the group, a healer is a person who creates space for other people to heal themselves.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
It's that simple. Yeah. So I can't heal you. I can give you tools. Uh-huh. And more importantly, I don't actually give tools because I don't actually consider myself to be a healer on a physical level. I tend to work with emotions. We work with the spirit. We want to invigorate your spirit so that you understand how to work in harmony with the spirit, how to walk every day in that harmony. So that's more of the type of thing that we heal with. A lot of trauma, that's the magic word to these days, trauma. It's at the root of so many things. And, you know, sometimes in my private sessions, I'll talk about a trauma that a lady's had or a man's had or something, and I'll put it in a different reference, and I'll frame it differently so they can see it in a different area, and they gain power over it.
Oh,
it loses the attachment.
Give us an example.
Sometimes I just tell them, hey, why did you set this up? If you as a spirit set this up from the other side, why? What would you gain from this? What do you think you were working with as a spirit? Over probably many lifetimes, what would that be like? And even if they don't answer it, they have a different view of everything now.
Well, so we do choose certain things before. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm
still looking
astrologer.
For the fine print.
And my sense about astrology is we choose what we want to come in to experience.
I get it. And we choose when we're born.
Right.
Which is astrology, we want
to
be under certain signs. Yeah, it's like a magnetic imprint.
Uh-huh.
Boom. We choose when we're born. They give us the illustrations. They put things in human terms so that we can understand them. And they basically say there's this huge table and all your friends come around the table, whether they're on the earth or not, and you make contracts and you say, would you love me enough to be my first lover in high school? And, that worked. And she says, yes, I'll do that. Okay. And then you go around the line. Would you be my parent? Would you be my Uncle Henry who steals money from me? Would you be my best friend in high school and steal my girlfriend so I can learn something? And then we set these up and we come in here and we forget all about them. And we go, why is this happening to me?
Yeah, that's bad. I didn't know it was that specific.
We do sometimes. Well, contracts are not, they're not things we have to do, like a legal contract. What happens is if we make a contract with another spirit, it's to come together. What we do from that point is entirely up to us. If we want to build a relationship, we'll build a relationship. If we just want to anger each other and keep moving, we'll do that, whatever it is.
You know, in I find that fascinating because in astrology, there's something called a vertex. And wherever it shows up in a chart, it refers to a before life agreement that was made, you know, and the texture of that agreement, of course, is unknown to the astrologer. I mean, you can come up with different versions of it, but that's fascinating.
It absolutely is. And that's what we've talked about in spiritual psychology as well as that's the first stage of life. And we talk about the seven stages of life in the book, Spiritual Psychology. That's the first stage is you're scripting your contracts. You're setting things up. You ask one parent, not both, because they're on planet of free choice. They may not choose each other.
Yeah.
So you have one primary parental contract. And sometimes that doesn't even work. Sometimes we jump into another place and we end up in a backup plan, which, all kinds
of. Well, that can get confusing.
We need a scorecard to keep track of the spirits here. That's.
But you know, when I was pregnant with our daughter, I asked for a dream, and the dream was what life were we together before, and I dreamed that I was in this warehouse, totally empty, just me. My water broke. She was born, and I picked her up, and she looks at me, opens her eyes, and she says Iceland. I thought, Iceland? It took me 18 years to figure out what Iceland was.
Oh, come on. You can't leave us hanging.
Well, okay. Well, I mean, I actually had to go to a psychic to find that out. And she said, and she went into trance, and she said she was referring, Iceland was not the country Iceland, but the temperature, the environment that was in northern, like Norway or Finland or something. And she said, in that life, Megan was your aunt, and you and Rob were brother and sister, and she took care of you when your parents died. And now this is her payback.
We do that so often. We lead people back many times to experience their own writing of their contract. Mm. And when we bring them back, we always ask, were those people that you saw in your life today? Uh-huh. Because most of the time they are. They're playing different roles. Yeah.
Interesting.
Does the group pick up on past lives?
Sometimes. I don't call myself a medium. I don't call myself ET, although they talk about ETs, but they are not actually from that realm. But I don't consider myself specialized in any of those areas. I'm much more generalized in a lot of different areas to be able to communicate with it. But we occasionally talk about past lives.
What do they say about the ETs?
Oh, they are very prevalent in here. They want us to know they're here. That's why they keep showing. That's why we keep getting more information on it all the time. We're seeing a lot with this I-3 Atlas that's going through.
Yeah, that thing is fascinating.
Size of New York, absolutely.
Yeah.
They're finding out a lot about this that will end up, whether that ends up passing through or not, they haven't decided. According to the group says the beings in that Radoth haven't actually decided what to do yet. But they're looking at the solar system, the whole system. So it should be.
They're really blowing away these astronomers and like that Ari Lowe from Harvard. He keeps saying.
Bobby Lowe? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and one of my favorite guys is Michio Kaku. I followed him.
Oh, yeah.
He's an astrophysicist. I followed for years, and he's almost screaming at the top of his lungs on his YouTube videos now. it's turned everybody around again. But I do believe we're here. The group actually said they are, four of them are our parental races. In other words, they helped humanity get started. There's probably a lot of truth in some of the things we've heard before, the Anunnaki, the different stories we've heard, some of the giants, different. I'm sure there's truth in a lot of that. But we are basically a race of beings with amnesia. That's how we play the game.
Jeez.
Yeah. So do they exist in our universe or are they multidimensional?
Well, now there's a really interesting question. That's what the group calls them. They don't call them ETs. They call them EDs, extra dimensional.
Okay.
ETs.
Well, if you're looking at an ET in the sky and all of a sudden it disappears or it takes off so fast that you can't follow it, the group says they're actually learning how to shift dimensions. They're not traveling billions of miles in that second. They're shifting dimensions and all of a sudden they're in a different world. Yeah. We'll learn how to do that too.
Oh, good. When?
Well, the government has been working, of course, with, you know, crash craft beings and so forth. They have developed anti-gravity, which they want to keep completely under wraps, of course. They don't want to ever reveal it unless they have to. So that is one of the things that they've done, but they don't have a good control over it. They don't know too much about it or how it works yet. And they don't, it's not in practice enough. You know, if you're building cars and you're sending 50,000 cars on the road, you're going to perfect them. That's not happening here. So it's very slow. But we're seeing technology. We're seeing some of these ETs that show up in our sky are actually our own. So we're seeing technology advance in many different ways that we just don't know about yet.
When you say they're our own, you're saying they're from the future or something that we have that is not known?
I think it's something we have that's not known.
Future
aspect is another piece that we'll be concerned. we need another hour and a half to talk about that one.
This is your next book, Steve.
And the multidimensional one, that's fascinating too.
Right. So you think time travel is possible?
I do. Okay. And furthermore, I think we will see pieces of it surface even in our lifetimes.
And you know, there was a congressperson just recently that was on a podcast, and she said that they're not extraterrestrial, they're interdimensional. So
they did really? That's perfect.
Yep.
Who was this?
I'll have to look that one up.
I don't want to go into it.
Okay.
Well, good. Thanks.
So
that's amazing. We've seen them before. They've been here. We've seen evidence of them before. They have played with our war toys. Mm-hmm. They have disarmed every single nuke that we had in our arsenal, and then they turned around to Russia and they armed every single one they had in their arsenal. They were freaking out. And just to show us that they have control, they're going to stop us from, because those nukes can actually damage other planets over periods of time. So we're not only messing with ourselves now, we're messing with the universe. So that's drawing even more attention from the ETs.
You know, years ago, we wrote for Omni magazine. Remember that magazine, the Red Pages?
Yeah, I do.
We spent a weekend with Betty Hill and Bud Hopkins at a UFO conference. And Betty Hill was one of the most interesting people I've ever met. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to describe what she was like. You know, I mean, she would like walk outside, look up like she did at our house, remember? And she said, "See that plane? It's a disguised ET." Now, maybe it was, but we're standing there going, it's an airplane. You know, we didn't see what she saw, you know.
No, I think you're right. People are tuned to different frequencies. Mm-hmm. We're all trying to live in a higher frequency. It's what we're calling the fifth dimension. It's here. The challenge about the fifth dimension is we wake up every morning and we see things in the third dimension, and we keep creating the third dimension inside the fifth dimension. So we need to stretch out, release some of our belief systems. You know, Rob, you said something a little earlier that I want to bring back, because it really shocked me when the group told me this, because I was very active in politics and everything else for a while. And the group said, you know, if you're on any side, you've been divided.
Mm-hmm.
And that just hit me. I couldn't, and they're absolutely right. We are taking sides with everything. We politicize things. We bring, you know, and hopefully that's that pendulum. And hopefully we're about to that point where we had enough. Well, swing back the other way.
Somebody said there's three sides to every story, right?
Nikola Tesla.
Probably.
He lived by the threes. Absolutely. The unit, the group says the universe is based in threes. That's correct.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting.
Fascinating stuff.
What about...
go ahead.
Okay. What about... you think we live simultaneous lives that our souls are manifested in the physical reality or multidimensional reality at the same time?
No doubt about it. Okay. I'm not the only one. Quantum science, the only way they can make it match is to bring it into dimensional dimension. Uh-huh. In fact, most physicists that I know are calling it the multiverse. They're not calling it the universe anymore because it doesn't make sense in the numbers. We're also finding this out from James Webb. James Webb Telescope mm-hmm. is bringing us back all sorts of information about time being an illusion, about all sorts of information they can't figure out yet. But we're getting some great insights, even through science, about our world and how we exist and what the whole process is through that process. Mm-hmm. Sorry, they start dumping things in and I get a little sidetracked.
I hope the ETs keep discouraging this atomic destruction of the universe. I mean, that would be awful.
I think they will. No, I don't. I think I haven't seen any evidence of this, but my guess is the arsenal in the United States is already rusted out. We're not keeping it up. We're not testing the missiles the way we used to. We're not doing a lot of things that we used to do on our arsenal. And I do believe that these are outdated. I think that, you know, they're keeping an eye on us because we got all kinds of countries that are trying to
right.
develop nuclear weapons so that they can move into power. But I also believe that there is a challenge with it on in our universe. And that is why they're here and why some are keeping an eye on it.
Well, the reason I mentioned simultaneous lifetimes is I had never heard that term or that concept until many years ago. I started reading a series of books by Jane Roberts, Huchenna Seth.
That's books.
And sure. When I met Trish.
Nature of reality.
Right. Uh-huh. When I met Trish, I had never met anybody else who read those books. And I was working as a journalist and I interviewed her for an article, for a story. And later on, we started talking and it turned out that she was in the same situation. She was reading all these Seth books and didn't have anybody to talk to about it. And that's how we got together.
Oh, cool.
Seth and one time we used to write a lot of magazine articles and, because of the subject matter we like to write about, some of them came out in what's the name of the magazine? The little magazine we used to
Fate magazine.
Fate magazine. One of our Fate magazine articles. I was reading it over as it came out, you know, and I get to the end. Right at the end is a little short article about four paragraphs about Jane Roberts having died.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's a synchronicity.
Unbelievable. We didn't honor these people until many times after. We weren't ready. They planted seeds. Jane Roberts, so many of them. Ruth Montgomery was one of my favorites.
Right.
All kinds of, in fact, I just, you know, realized about 2 years ago that Ruth Montgomery used to channel Art, Seth, and the group.
Yes.
Never put that together, whether it was the same group or not. But yeah, interesting stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah. Fascinating, fascinating things. Wonderful.
So where are they now?
Where are the group or where
well,
Jane
where
Roberts?
Are Jane Roberts and Ruth Montgomery and these people who contributed so much? Are they going to come
watching.
Back?
Yeah, they certainly can. They have it entirely up to their own path.
Uh-huh.
When a spirit spends a lot of time in the public eye, many times they're overwhelmed. They have kind of a quiet lifetime after that. They kind of Well, they're so sensitive that they come in and they have to kind of protect themselves. They become extreme empaths. And that's many times what happens. It's almost like it's almost, again, the pendulum swinging back and forth and kind of a restful type of thing where they're not in the public eye because that can be devastating. Other people thrive on it. You know, want to keep coming back and try to do it as much as possible. But for the most part, Jane left us, what, 68, 69? No, she left us.
No, 83.
Was it 83 when she
I think so.
83. She was an amazing lady.
Yeah, she started her, I think her first book came out in 63.
But right.
It was so strange reading that back then, you know, that because
Strangers Among Us was one thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's a risk.
Amazing step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in the way the group talks about multidimensionality, I will tell you that we have a problem with our limited brain. We can't understand some things. Real simple. You were never going to be able to concretely observe infinity. we know what it is, but we really don't have any concept of it. Yeah. So the group puts it into stories that we'll understand.
You know.
When they talk about multidimensionality, they talk about a white light coming from home, perfect white light, hits a crystal. We call the crystal our higher selves, but it's a crystal, so it divides up the perfect light like a prism, and all these imperfect waves, and we have 11 different used, and your higher self, which makes all 12. Huh. And that's what they talk about over here. I'm married and have 3.2 kids. And over here, I'm a devout bachelor. And over here, you know, we make different choices with the same spirit, the same energy, but different choices. Mm-hmm. And we grow different.
Do these different entities ever meet?
Yes. Well, okay. First of all, when we die, we all come back together. But also now, we're reaching this level where these walls between dimensions are starting to fade. We're seeing evidence of this in so many ways. What is it? It's a Mandela effect.
Mm-hmm.
If we keep talking about this strange thing that's happening with this Mandela effect.
Yeah, it is a
people
weird
remembering
thing.
They're remembering things from other dimensions. If you've ever really gone into a deep sleep and had this vivid memory where you were somebody else. It's probably one of your other dimensions you slipped into during the REM state of sleep. That happens.
Just check it in.
Yep. Checking up on you, right?
How's it going?
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned Ruth Montgomery. One of the things she liked to write about is concept of walk-ins. What do you think of that idea?
I do think that happened. It happened, of course, when she introduced it, everybody was a walk-in.
Yeah, right.
You know, everybody would tell you, well, I'm a walk-in, but then, you know, which was fine. It doesn't make any difference. You know, if a person believes something, they create it. Real simple.
Yeah.
So if they believe that gives them a focus and a direction, perfect.
Yeah.
And some people are. Most walk-ins that I actually experienced myself, because I did experience a few doing private sessions and so forth, we're so shy. We're so withdrawn. We're so hiding that it was very difficult to really get down to who they were.
So they were scared?
Almost as if there was a protective shell around them. Yes. Yes.
That's interesting.
But near the end of your book, you talk about the concept that we could live more than one life within a life.
That's true.
Yeah, and that's kind of like a walk-in too, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. That's exactly what they're talking about there. That one of the places that they're talking about. You can also, we also have capabilities once we blend these dimensions back together of doing all sorts of things. That's also when we're going to see even massive spikes in our technology, which will kind of keep up and allow for some of that. Yeah.
So what do you think of AI and its effect on us in the future?
Oh, we're just getting started.
I mean, now Google, if you Google something, it's an AI response, you know.
That's right. Well, yeah. that's what ChatGPT, all of them are basically, they're the new search engines.
Right. They're, right.
We go there for answers now. That's kind of amazing.
There's a guy.
Yeah, I think it's going to help. I think it's going to help us down the road. We're looking at an explosion on planet Earth. It hasn't hit yet, but it's about to. AI is just opening the door. Yeah. Right behind it, we have robotics. We have something called quantum computing. But there's a step between quantum computing and typical binary computing, and that's ternary computing, which is going to start developing 1,000 times faster computers, which we will have in our homes within a year. And that's how fast.
Okay, John, you hear that?
And that's the three sides of every story. But also, yes, exactly. What we have right now is just some really fancy heuristic engines. Until we have reliable quantum computers, there's no way to create actual intelligent AI. But anyway,
I agree. Yeah. No, I totally agree. AI is picking up information and putting it together. There's no consciousness there. Yeah. I've never seen that. So
one place that AI is wrong is with astrology. The other day I was testing it. I thought, no, this is wrong. Where did you get this information?
And then it'll apologize to you.
Yeah, no.
And to be clear, that's kind of the scary part at the moment, is because things can be stubbed out where it's the wrong answer, but maybe that's the answer they want, whoever has control of the large language model wants you to hear. Anyways.
Yeah. But if you correct them, they'll go immediately respond with the correction, it's just like they filtered it into the process.
In some cases it's like a child, but yeah, if it's true generative AI.
It's fascinating. Where I have a new computer on my, it's over here, but it's one of the new AI computers, because they're building now into the GPU instead of the CPU. And it's this big.
What?
And it's this.
Who makes it?
I'm going to have to disconnect it so that I can show it to you if you're watching.
Don't disconnect yourself.
Yeah.
There it is.
Oh.
My God.
Are you familiar with those?
John, this is an i9.
Sure.
It'll handle four monitors with no problem.
Is it like a Raspberry Pi in the
No.
Yeah.
Okay. No, this is a full-on Windows computer.
Okay.
Wow.
Windows 11.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Enough. And they're popping up everywhere.
But that's why NVIDIA's has gone through the roof, is because the GPUs because they're selling a lot of GPUs for that background processing. So no doubt.
That's what's going on right now. We're switching over, and NVIDIA rules the world right now. NVIDIA and TCM, yes, or TSM.
Where'd you get that little computer?
Amazon.
Really? Wow. That's incredible. Okay.
Yeah, we're moving very fast in the technological area.
Huh.
Manufacturers will take a time to catch up. You can see what's happening with Google, Microsoft. Right. They're all trying to work with different things to replace passwords.
Mm-hmm.
Because we
need it.
Well, with all the information that's already in a file somewhere about each one of us, it wouldn't take much to figure out passwords.
Yeah.
These quantum computers, and even the ternary computers, unbelievable speed that we've never seen before. So they're trying to go to pass keys. They're trying to come up with all these things to replace passwords right now.
Biometrics, that's the big thing. And, Apple's been doing it for a while with Face ID. But
the people we have our website from, we have different websites in different places in different countries. And we have to put SSL certificates on each one. It's basically a certificate that says who you are, who you say you are. And they have to check you out. We used to be able to buy them for up to 8 years. we're going to have to renew them every 6 months.
Jeez.
That's what's happening.
What do you renew them with?
Yeah, there's an SSL place that you'll have to buy them from different vendors that sell SSL certificates. Yeah, secure socket layer. It's part of the technology that's built the internet safely. It's when you see HTTPS on there. That's what the secure socket layer is.
And that is a huge thing going forward right now, is that there's going to need to be some kind of digital thumbprint, because with what, like Sora 2 and the videos that are being generated, the generative AI is at a point. It's not particularly smart, but it can really, it can fool you. It can fool you for sure. And when it's, you know, when it's generating video that you don't know if it's real or not, that's where we need the digital thumbprints, so we know.
I totally agree.
True or not.
Totally agree.
So, Steve, what does the group think about AI? Are they warning us it's going to destroy us? Or
now, it's our invention. So this would be as if we talked about the ATs, that basically were our parental race. Mm-hmm. We may be AI's parental race.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a little scary.
It's really scary. But with the explosion in technology we're about to see, we've come pretty close to that. We'll see.
And, well, and you know, that is something I've thought of, something I've thought about for a long time, is once we create, you know, whether it's artificial life or, you know, we've been cloning animals since, you know, the late 80s, early 90s. I don't remember
when they've been cloning humans too.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, once you start doing that, then that's where things kind of turn upside down, because now you're playing God. So,
then you're living inside fiction.
we'll see. And the reality is the genie never goes back in the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
So
wherever
it is, we're going to play with what we got, you know. It'd be amazing.
We see a guy regularly at the dog park when we take Nigel to our golden retriever, who is he's a few years older than us, and he's very much afraid of AI. And
well, he's totally against it, not just afraid of it.
He said one time he said, "I'll cut my fingers off before I use AI." And then, very soon after that, he's talking about something. I said, "You know, you got that through AI, didn't you?"
No, I didn't.
Without realizing it's there, you know?
I know. Well, I kind of grew up with this. You asked about my father. I'll share with you another story that I'm very technical. He was an electrical engineer. I built most of the computers in my studio. I just love doing those kind of things. For me, I have a job that pays for my toys. But my father was really interesting, because he really wanted to do something for people in a large way. He tried different aspects. He was just ahead of his time doing similar things that I'm doing. He literally even started the first conscious dating service that we had.
Oh, wow.
he really, really did a lot of different aspects of things to be able to do that. But he set a lot up. And when you talked about your parents and continuing different aspects, my mother was a writer who never got published. And my father was a light worker who never got seen, never really helped. I got to do both.
You got to do both. That's interesting.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you were the manifestation of two of their combined desires.
I have no doubt that they were on my shoulder.
Uh-huh.
In high school, you could not have convinced me that I would write a book, ever. It's just not, that wasn't in my bailiwick at all. So, but here it is.
Yeah. Speaking of your book, the group says we all have a signature rhythm. What is that?
Well, we're vibration. Everything on this side of the veil vibrates, whether it's a rock, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, it vibrates at different frequencies and so forth. We have different rhythms My fingernail has a different rhythm than the palm of my hand. It's a different dense material. But totally, all of my rhythms harmonize. And that's a signature rhythm. It's at the base of my favorite music. It's at the base of different things that I do. I'm a drummer, so I'm obviously all about rhythm anyway. I walk across the room in a rhythm. We speak in rhythms. We do different aspects of things that we can start to work with actual rhythms in different ways. But those are vibrations. So whether we call it a vibration, whether we call it a rhythm, it's all basically the same. When we get out, it means that we have altered something in our vibration of part of our body, and it's out of sync with our signature rhythm. So sometimes finding that signature rhythm, sometimes releasing the fear, sometimes doing different aspects of that can help you reset your own inner strength. That's what the signature rhythm is all about.
I bet you use that a lot in your therapy with people.
We do. I do a lot of activations online too, video and audio activations where we have different things that are, the group guides me through all these fun things that we do.
Do we still have that signature after death?
You know, that's an interesting question. Nobody's ever asked me that. The group is saying, yes, it is your signature that you created when you came in from a baby. So yes.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Nobody's ever asked me that one before.
I always think about the after-death stuff. I don't know why. But
what happens when we die?
Here we go.
We become part of everything again. If you've ever seen the movie Powder,
yeah,
that's about the best visual explanation I could possibly give you. At the end, when he dies, it's like you disperse your energy and you become part of everything. You don't disappear. You become part of everything. Hard to describe. Hard to describe.
Wait, what was the movie?
Powder. We watched that a long time ago. We'd have to watch that again.
Who was in that?
I can't remember the guy's name. I remember Mary Steenburgen was in it and Jeff Goldblum was in it, but I don't remember the kid's name.
It's in about an albino, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Okay. I remember this.
Oh, and the thing is, we're stardust, right? We're stardust.
Well, that's it. And we know that. We know that from physics. We know that from astrophysics, especially. Yes, we are.
Yep.
We're a combination of so many beautiful things, and we carry pieces of all of that. So think of ourselves as humans, but we're a little more. We're a lot more.
Why? Okay, here's a question. Why do some souls check out early? I asked because 2 years ago, my sister suddenly died. She was younger, and she was sick for 2 days, and that was it. What the hell? You know, I'm supposed to die first.
But what a nice way out. Sick for 2 days and you're gone. I'd go for that. Yeah. Your sister actually stayed longer than she had anticipated. She was always going to leave early. She postponed it twice. Does she have children?
Three.
Does she have a son?
Three sons.
She had three sons.
Okay. One of the sons is the reason she stayed. She stayed twice, so she postponed it twice.
The younger one,
I'm sure. And then there you go. Yeah. And then she couldn't. And that's what readings are like. Basically, they show me these things, and then I have to interpret them. Yeah. So basically, that's what took place with her. She basically stayed longer than she originally did. Huh. Why do people leave early? There's always a ripple that goes through humanity when somebody crosses the veil. Most of the time, we don't pay attention. When a child leaves, that ripple's huge. When somebody younger, and we go, oh, they left early, that ripple hits us harder. We start to look at things. Why don't we teach this stuff in school?
We really should.
A child is going to experience death in multiple times in their life. Why not we talking about it? Exactly.
Now, I used to teach Spanish to middle schoolers, and they didn't want to learn Spanish. So one day I said, okay, what we're going to do, every Friday we're going to talk about psychic things. But the other 4 days, you've got to learn about Spanish. Well, they loved it. And then it turned out that one kid started going out of body, and he reported it to his mother. And the administration came to me and said, Trish, you can't teach this. Oh, I said, okay.
For what it's worth, Trish, my high school Spanish class, what I came out the other end with was no hablo español. So.
Yeah, that's probably what these kids came out with, that and out-of-body experiences.
Yeah. So, Steve, what happens to someone who dies who believed in nothing, that there was nothing? But
what we believe, what we work with here is entirely up to us. When we come down here and we, shall I say, waste a lifetime, nobody judges us for that. Mm-hmm. We may judge ourselves for that when we go home. And we may set something up next time to where it hits us right in the face and we can't hide from mm-hmm. it, or we can't do something of that nature. Mm-hmm. That is typically what takes place.
Yeah. Huh. I had a friend that died not too long ago who was like that, and I kind of felt him around a bit, and he was annoying during lifetime, and I think he's...
Because he didn't understand why we believed what we did, why we were what we did.
And a lot of that in religion is all about belief, 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 belief.
Yeah.
We have no proof, but you have to believe. You know, if you have the mustard seed and all the rest, which is really interesting, but I believe in other things.
Yeah.
It's really simple. Right. Yeah. We have a lot of beliefs we can believe in. So it's,
I always found it interesting that he always wanted to, you know, spend some time with us, but yet what we talked about, what we felt and believed was totally against everything he believed. And
it's totally so alien to him.
Why did he even want to deal with this is what I always wondered.
it's absolutely fascinating. When we go home, we have so many things that we can work with. I think the biggest thing about belief in general is that we have to believe. We have to believe in something. That which we believe in and that which we are thankful for, we create. It's real simple. That's the easiest two things I can tell you about manifestation. Be thankful for it even before you get it. And open up and work with some of these things to create it. But we are creator beings. Mm-hmm. It's in the Bible over and over and over again. Jesus said it over and again. You can do this and more. When he was asked about the miracles that he performed, he basically told us we had all those capabilities. We do. We can work with this. We can open up a lot of these possibilities and not hit now. The group does say that belief systems are a problem on Earth right now. Yeah. And that's absolutely true. They call belief systems BS for that very reason. But we're not talking about just a belief. But if you believe this, and you have to believe this, you have to believe this, you have to believe all these other pieces, that is getting us in a lot of trouble.
And the state religions you're talking about.
Unfortunately, yes.
Anyway, well, and
raised
and,
very religious and... no longer. I believe in the principles. I just don't buy the story.
Yeah.
Belief versus faith. Faith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Faith is a much more powerful word to me than belief is. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
I think we've come to the end of our hour.
Oh, this is great.
Thank you for joining
us. Can we have you on again? I have a lot to talk about.
Hang on. I got one more thing I need to share and I know I've shared this quote, and it's not my favorite. It's not the best version of this Michio Kaku quote, but the universe is a symphony of strings and the mind of God that Einstein eloquently wrote about for 30 years would be cosmic music resonating through 11 dimensional hyperspace.
Wow.
And that is, I love Kaku too. So
I do too. He's such a beautiful writer.
Yeah.
He's the one that, developed string theory. His big thing was string theory. And the only way he could get string theory and Einstein's theory of relativity to coincide was to go into 11 dimensions. Interesting.
Interesting. So how can people get in contact with you and find out more about you?
SteveRother.org. That's steverother.org. We do a lot of things. We do a monthly podcast on YouTube, question and answers. I go into live channel and answer any questions that you have. Do that every month. We put out, of course, all sorts of free and paid events that we do that support their organization.
Now, is your YouTube free?
Yes. All the YouTube.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, check it out.
Is that under your Steve Rother YouTube?
The best way to find it is steverother.org. I will tell you it's labeled as ASPAVA, which is the name of our organization.
Right. Okay.
But every time I'd say ASPAVA, people would put a B instead of a V. So we stopped. That's why we called it steverother.org. People can understand that.
I was wondering because your email is that ASPAVA.
Well, that's the name of our organization. It came from a channel that the group originally said came from Lemuria, early greeting from hello.
Lemuria? Wow.
Literally translated, it means thank you for taking your power.
That is cool.
We'll link to all the stuff.
Yeah.
I promise.
Fascinating.
Okay, thank you, Steve.
Okay, well, thank you, Steve. This has been so great. Tell us when you want to come on again.
I'd love to, guys. This is fun. This is like this is like being with family.
It really is.
We really enjoyed it. Yeah, good.
Absolutely.
All right.
Well, excellent.
Okay.
Thanks for joining The Mystical Underground. Visit www.themysticalunderground.com for the latest blog post and book info. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. Listen to the podcast at podcast.themysticalunderground.com. Follow Trish and Rob on Instagram at Trish and Rob McGregor. Follow us on Twitter at The Mystic Cast. Send email to podcast@themysticalunderground.com. And until next week, thank you for listening and stay mystical. Yeah.